the coast. Ooh, we're gon' take it all.
Take it all.
I record, then I ball.
Then I ball.
I ignored a lot of calls.
Click, click.
You ain't talking about nothing. I ain't got no time. Got that Donetto on my mind. Ooh, I got real problems just like you. Tell that shit I don't like you.
Oh, fuck you.
Ain't nothing to it. Real one. Ain't nothing to it. Boss.
Hey everyone, Jamelia Ramad. Thank you so much for having me, Alexis.
How long have you been in the PR business?
I've been in PR for 13 years now. I got my start while I was still in college. I was lucky enough to have the right mentors that guided my career while I was in college and landed me some of the top sought-after internships for college students. And I've just been going at it ever since.
Awesome. You were saying that you had a mentor. Can you tell me the importance that you think your mentor brought to you for your career?
Absolutely. So throughout my life, I've had several mentors who I can all say have helped me get to where I am today and helped me find out more about myself, what it is that I like to do and what I'm good at. Because, you know, we can always like to do something and not be good at it.
Right.
So to start in college, I actually started out as a healthcare major. And I realized I didn't like blood, I didn't like guts, I didn't like hospitals. And I know, right? One heck of a way to be in school as a pre-med student and you don't like any of those things because you need to, you know, like that nitty-gritty what's inside the body. I did not.
Right.
So I luckily had a really good mentor, and he said, you know, why don't you try the business side of healthcare? And for me, that business side of healthcare was healthcare marketing. And, you know, that flourished into other things. And then I went to a governmental agency, and that's how I decided, okay, what I really like is PR over marketing, because I knew a lot about marketing at that time. But I remember even in the interview for that internship, I had no idea what PR was. And luckily, that boss became my mentor and really guided me into the world of PR.
Great, because I was just about to ask you, what made you fall in love with PR? And for the people who don't know, what exactly do you say public relations is?
So public relations is where you or a brand or a business gets to connect with their customer base, with their audience, with the people who are most invested in them, whether that's stakeholders, whether that's advertisers, whether that is people in the community that need to buy into their message or buy into whatever it is that they're offering. So public relations is building that relationship. If you think about the word backwards, it's relating to the public so that you can build your business by, you know, your brand awareness or by getting others to share your message. It's essentially using other people and using media outlets. That's more of the publicity side of things to tell your story.
You're leading up to where I want to get to the meat and potatoes. How important is it to tell your story as far as a brand or an entrepreneur or a business owner?
I think it's very important because if you really want people to love you, not only for who you are, but for what it is you offer, they kind of want to see your journey. Especially as a small business owner, as an entrepreneur, you want people to know that story so they can build that emotional connection with you. So that, you know, when you cry, they cry. So that when you're happy, they're happy. When you're celebrating, they too are celebrating and they feel like they have that connection with you. Have you ever, like, follow somebody on social media, like Instagram or Facebook or something, and y'all totally don't know each other, but you feel like y'all are best friends?
Yes. Yes, I know.
See, that's because, like, you've heard their story and you know some things about them, so it starts to feel personal to you. And when it comes to public relations for a big business or small business, that, too, is still the goal. They still want you to have that, you know, I feel like I need to support this company. So that's really the power and the reason behind public relations in business.
What would the four P's or three P's be for public relations? Or even if they're not P's, what are the most important things?
I think the really important things, let's see if I can figure out words that can go with P. I would definitely say press. I would definitely say people, because you need to have somebody to relate your message to. Press, people, and, gosh, P? That other one. okay, so I can't think of a P, but it would definitely be your brand message and, you know, what it is you say, because you always want to say the right thing to the right people at the right time.
Gotcha. So what I want to ask is, remember when you did Work Pray Slay and you were showing the differences between certain advertisements? Can you explain, like, you were saying, like, one has a story and one is just kind of telling you buy, 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 right?
Yep.
Can you explain two examples, like, those examples, between those examples, and which one is, of course, the better one?
Yes. So, of course, I am in public relations, so I'm always going to say public relations is the best. But when you're thinking about advertising versus public relations, the advertising ads are the things that you always see in magazines. You know, those one sheets that's going to show you the hair care product and the beautiful model, and it's just going to say the name and the logo of the company. Sometimes it will list out, you know, where you can buy it, maybe a website, but overall, you don't know the price. You don't know exactly what your next steps should be, and you don't know any of the story behind the brand. So you see this lovely picture, and, you know, it's attractive to your eyes, but at the same time, if it doesn't have that emotional connection to you, the only good that that advertisement is going to do is to stick in your brain for hopefully the next time that you go to, you know, the grocery store, the next time you're walking down the aisle at Target. So that's what your advertisements are when you're looking at what is publicity. So when you get publicity, that's when you get a story told by a media outlet about you. And in that opportunity, you get the chance to talk about your brand, talk about your business, talk about who you help, who you best help. You get to talk about some successes that you've had in your business or in your brand. You know, like if you think about the press that Apple gets, and, you know, you'll see maybe a commercial or something and you see the iPhone. But then when you get that opportunity to see, rest of soul, Steve Jobs, when you see him on stage, that's where you build up that emotional cult-like connection that iPhone, Apple people have with him. That's because he built a relationship that seems like it's that emotional draw. So, you know, when something comes out with iPhones, they're like, okay, our community is doing something. We are iPhone. So it makes you feel a part of the group, and that's public relations.
As you were saying that, I was just thinking, like, I love iPhones, even with, you know, some of the, what am I trying to say? Like, you know, some things, you know, nothing is perfect, right? But I was just thinking about, there's this one commercial where they're trying to convince you to get a Samsung, right? So they're showing all the things that are wrong with the iPhone. You know, you use up your storage and you got to get another one. You got to get another one. So finally, this guy from Samsung, this guy actually went and he got a Samsung and he doesn't have those problems. But me as a customer, well, me looking at that commercial, I'm still like, yeah, it's a great story, but I'm still team iPhone. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah, exactly. They definitely got me.
And it's true, though, because I have an Android, and all the things that you iPhone people complain about, I'd be like, my phone is straight. I'm not having any of those struggles. Wi-Fi fast, got lots of data, got lots of storage, have crystal clear, perfect pictures. But even in saying all that and even showing the proof, y'all still be like, see my phone.
Yes. I used to have an Android too, so I understand, like, there are not really as many struggles as, you know, you have with the iPhone. So I understand, but I'm like T iPhone, so.
Exactly. It's that loyalty there. And that's really the goal of all public relations. You want to build that loyalty with your audience to where even though it's something better out there for them, they still gonna rock with you.
Oh, I love that. I love that. What made you decide to finally take the jump or the leap of faith and do it for yourself?
I don't know if there was a specific incident. I think it was just kind of how things happened and panned out over time. So working in PR in my corporate America career job, that's what I was doing. But at that point, I was like, okay, well, you know, I want to do something that's different, something that's solving a problem that I had personally. I was like, I got to take care of me, so I'm going to solve this problem that I'm having. The problem was when I was in grad school, you know, and working full-time, I never really had a lot of opportunities to, like, just hang out with my friends and then still be able to go home. And in grad school, you write a term paper, like, every night. So I didn't have time for all that. So I really began to like happy hour where, you know, right after work, so you didn't have to go home and have to change clothes. Right after work, you would go and hang out for 2 or 3 hours and you make it home for dinner. And, you know, you make it home for dinner. You still got time for homework. You're still in bed by a decent hour. And the crowd wasn't as rowdy. So my first business that I created was a young professional networking organization that was in Atlanta and Tampa. And it was really solving the problem of people in big cities being able to find friendships and being able to hang out after work. From building that business, I think I had Sokol for 3 years. And building that business, that was when I realized, okay, I really like this little entrepreneur thing. You know, that was my side hustle. But then I was like, okay, you know, I'm starting to, because the events grew really big, I'm starting to work with a lot of small businesses or people with side hustles or entrepreneurs who are coming to be vendors at these events. And all the time they would ask me, you know, how are you finding all these people to attend? You know, your marketing is so strong. You know, we get to the events, this is a great experience. How are you doing it? And I started realizing this is something that I can help people build for their business. Very similar to what I'm doing for a corporation. That was when I was like, okay, well, I'm going to start the second business now. And in starting that second business, which was my PR agency consultancy, I kind of outgrew my corporate America job.
Would you say, I guess your first business was similar to Meetup?
Yep, similar to Meetup, except we were going to different restaurants every month in Atlanta. It was never the same. And the events were attended by about 75 to 100 people per event. There were ticket sales. So initially when I started that business, I started on Meetup. And then I moved over to Eventbrite because I was like, I need to do things differently than what Meetup platform offers. Like, I created a business, and we're now playing a Meetup game. So similar but very different. We would have speed networking at times. We would have some themed events. We would go to the hottest places in Atlanta. We had sponsorships. So it was a really dope event. If y'all are looking to start a business, y'all should start that one because no one else has done it since.
Yeah, I don't know if they have anything like that, but I'll look into that because I'm always about, like, starting a new business or something like that. So
I'll look into it.
With your sponsorship, you pretty much started from the bottom and now, you know, you're where you are now. And during that transition time, you know, people didn't know you, right? I mean, I know you have some connections as far as with your corporate job and some of your events, but how did you pitch to those companies that they needed to have you?
I had no idea exactly what I was building because, like I said, initially I was trying to solve my own problems. Hang out with the friends I already have, meet some new people, be home at a decent hour. So.
Right.
That business was built out of passion, but, of course, you know, I have definitely business acumen, so I was always, you know, keeping track of who was there, who was attending, email addresses, the venues that we worked with, because initially, you know, it was just a free event. Hey, come one, come all. Please come. I don't know what's going to happen. I didn't start out with sponsorships. I know there's a lot of people, you know, in business, it might be their first year, have an event or something like that, and they get really down and hard on themselves when, you know, they don't reach certain amounts of sponsorship dollars. But you don't necessarily start like that. You have to prove your value over time. So with that business, it probably was 6 months. And remember, we were hosting events every month. 6 months of that and doing things for free and doing them for cheap. Before I ever had people who said, hey, I want to sponsor this. Hey, and, you know, they all at that time were pitching me Because, again, this was before I was thinking of it as a business. It was just kind of my passion project that I was making a little bit of money from. But they wanted to start having access to those audiences and the people who are there. They wanted to start advertising to them. So once I realized the value that I had created, then it was easier to get the sponsorships because you know what other people are looking for.
That's a great point that you said that as far as it took you 6 months, you know, and you had to do things for free before you got those sponsorships. But during those 6 months, people were actually watching you. I think that's a better point. Like, you just never know who's really watching you. I had a mentor before, and she was telling me that she's very silent. But I think she, like, watched my steps, you know, watched what I did and stuff before she actually, I was able to work for her. But because people just, they need that, I guess, that assurance. They need that story, and they need that assurance as well.
They want to know that you're going to put in that work, too. You know, they don't want to just jump right on board, and it's like, you know, you aren't hardly working. So your mentor definitely was like, okay, she's out here working. I work with her.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I know you don't do this all by yourself. You definitely have a team around you.
Yep, I do. I have a great team that has taken years to build, and we're still building. I definitely think that we're only at the tip of the iceberg of what we have the potential to be. Starting with building my team initially started with a lot of trial and error. I've had interns since when I first started that other business because initially that first business, for it to be an event and, you know, people, 75 to 100 people were coming out, and I was the only one. I didn't have interns because, again, it was a passion project. I thought it was cool. I was just having a good time. So I wasn't like, yeah, I'm going to take the responsibility on training people. All of that didn't come till later, so it kind of was organic. But, you know, starting with working with interns, I immediately went to local colleges, and I got a lot of students from HBCUs, and I love that, or a lot of students who are, you know, interested in PR and wanted to see what it was like to market, or people who were into event planning and wanted to see what it was like. And from the internship program, that, I think, where I realized the things that did and did not work from a leadership standpoint, when you have subordinates or employees or interns, I will say that the hiring, firing, internship programs, all of that has been a process. Just as long as I've been in business, it's always a process.
Why would you say that? Do you think it's because sometimes you may get attached or, you know, what do you think?
That is true. You also may have some horrible interns. So speaking to the first, getting attached, you know, when you're hiring college students, of course, they're going to graduate and move on. So sometimes that means leaving you, or sometimes that means, you know, they'll stick around for 6 months to a year, and then they land that job, and suddenly you get, you know, a phone call from them, and they're like, I love you and all, but I have a job now.
Right.
So that is definitely something, you know, that you have to plan for in a small business or when you have interns, because you don't necessarily think of the day that they're going to quit. And are you ready to handle what happens if they quit? So then moving to the horrible times that we've had interns, or, you know, the horrible times where I've had employees or hired other consultants onto contracts, and it's been a hot mess. And again, that's a process. And you always hear the saying, and you don't necessarily think it's true. I remember the first time that I had to fire somebody. And it's not that I hadn't fired people, you know, in my corporate job. Many times, you know, my boss would call me in there and be like, hey, so today you're going to let such and such go because, you know, they did this, 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 and that. We don't like it, but you're going to tell them. It's so different when, I know, when it's your company and they're like, hey, you know, you see them underperforming or you see them showing up late or you see them giving half efforts and you just really like, I'm going to have to fire them. I don't want to. Yeah. Like, they're in this internship and they're getting a grade, but I'm going to have to let them go. So once I got over the emotion in that, because for some reason when I was in corporate and I would have to let people go, like, I would feel bad. But usually they were doing bad stuff anyway. Like, the firings were justified. And even then, though, the interns and the employees and the contractors that I fired, it was justified, but it was just, you know, that emotion tied to it. Like, I'm the one who hired you. I'm the one who trained you. I'm the one who put my trust in you, you know, to help me run my business, because this business is my baby. I trusted you. Once I got over that, I fired people quick now. I'll let you go in a heartbeat. Like, I don't have time for games. And I understand that we all mess up. We all have errors. We all go through something. There's seasons in our lives. Mm-hmm. Cool. But if it is a problem that I see constant and I can see it coming again, I'm only going to deal with that problem once. So when it comes to, you know, the horrible employees, the horrible interns, my best advice in that area is to trust your gut every time. Even if you like, dang, I feel bad, or oh, I trusted them. Trust your gut. If you think you should fire them and it's like a real quick side eye, go ahead and just do it, and you can move on faster and look for somebody else who's going to do the job right.
I love that. And I think those are just great points, because I think that, I want to say, as women, we, you know, have our emotions just are on our sleeve just a little bit more than men are. So, but, you know, I totally understand. At the end of the day, follow your gut, and you just, it's probably something that you have to do, because your business is, you know, your baby. You know, you're creating a legacy. Speaking of legacy, did you think that when you started out that you would be creating something like this, like of a legacy?
I didn't. Every time I start something new, I just go in with optimism, because you don't know what's going to happen. You know, I've done a lot of projects. Well, I was extremely successful, and it was great. Some of them have failed, but, you know, going into it, I'm just like, blood, sweat, and tears, here we come. And, you know, you hope for the best. You never know what it is you're building. And looking back at the first business that I had, and even in me closing it, so many people were hurt by that. You know, they still were like, you know, you're not doing this no more? And I'm like, no, I'm doing something else now. But you will still have, you know, those emotional ties to everything that you've built, not knowing what was going to happen. That, for me, started as a passion project. I didn't know it was going to turn into a business. I didn't know years later, once I was ready to close the doors, that people would be really touched by what I had created. So you never know what's going to happen. You just always have to put your most into it. Like, if you're going to build a business, do really good at it. If you're going to, you know, teach people something, give them everything you know. So I definitely say I was just so into things, being optimistic and not knowing what's going to happen, always trusting that God's going to lead the way.
I do have just one more question, because I didn't ask it earlier, but about the pitches, what are the most important things you would have to say go into a pitch? Because I'm sure you've gotten like plenty of disappointing pitches. What would you say are the most important things to have in there?
I think the most important thing to have in your pitch is knowledge of who you're pitching. You can't just be sending out emails all willy-nilly and blank, not knowing who you're talking to, not knowing what you're talking about. So for me, the most important thing in pitching is having research, you know, who I'm talking to, what we're talking about. Is this going to be something that they even want to hear about? So often, you may be, you know, pitching the wrong journalist. If you're pitching a journalist and they write about food segments and you're trying to pitch them on politics, it's not a good fit. So you need to have that research piece done of who you're talking to first. Secondly, when it comes to pitching, I would definitely say being able to tell your story in a very short, concise way. Most of the times now, pitches are done via email. You know, you're emailing somebody for an opportunity. People don't want to read your 10-page letter about your life. If you can figure out a way to boil that down, guess what? They will open that long thing and not even read the first three sentences, because it's overwhelming. They get so many emails day in and day out. They don't want to read your 10-page letter about your story, and then you're asking at the very end of that 10-page letter, hey, will you do a feature with me? No. So definitely being able to tell your story in a short, concise way that's interesting to the right people is the most important thing that you can have in your pitch.
I love that. And I just want to end it on that note.